Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the summer of 2014, Gaza was attacked by Israel for the fourth time since 2006. This attack lasted 51 days, and it killed 2,000 Palestinians. 70 Israelis also died. Today's guest, Norwegian surgeon Dr. Mads Gilbert, worked at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital with Palestinian doctors during last year's assault. They treated more than 11,000 Palestinians who were wounded in the longest and most destructive attack on Gaza. Dr. Gilbert kept a camera in his pocket, and when it was appropriate, he took photos of his patients. His new book, Night in Gaza, includes those photos, along with stories about what he saw. Dr. Gilbert believes the medical profession should not be detached from society. Medicine should be a peaceful weapon against oppression and injustice, and a force for good. Dr. Gilbert has been carrying out medical solidarity work for the Palestinians since 1981, and last year Israel banned him from ever returning. In his book, Night in Gaza, he writes, quote, "When a pen, a camera, and a stethoscope are seen as security threats, we know we are dealing with a regime that is afraid of the truth," end quote. Dr. Mads Gilbert is a specialist in anesthesiology and head of the emergency medicine department at the University Hospital of North Norway. He's also co-founder of the Norwegian Aid Committee. Dr. Mads Gilbert will be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the South Berkeley Senior Center, 2939 Ellis Street at Ashby. And Dr. Mads Gilbert joins me in studio. Hi, Mads. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Thank you. And good morning to your listeners. And thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So since the 1980s, you have been heavily involved in medical solidarity work around the world. You've been to Burma, Angola, Afghanistan, Cambodia, and Lebanon, mostly working with war-wounded patients. But since 1981, you have been working with Palestinians, and you've mostly spent your time in Gaza.
Yeah, for the last 15 years, it's been mostly medical projects in Gaza. I've been working with teaching, with training of local staff, medical students, medical doctors, paramedics in the ambulance system. I've been doing research, and then I've been asked to come and do clinical work during the times of attacks and large numbers of casualties. And for the last missions I've been there, I've been traveling on behalf of my governmental university hospital. So I'm sent actually by the Norwegian government, in a sense, to support the Palestinian healthcare system. Mm-hmm. I don't support Hamas. I don't support Fatah. I don't support Jihad or any other Palestinian political party or group. I think, along with most ordinary good people, I support the Palestinian people and their right to resist occupation and their right to resist apartheid. And I think this is the fundamental question. Which side are you on? There will be no security. There will be no peace as long as Israel is occupying Palestine. And an occupied people has the right, according to international law, to resist occupation with the means they see fit, also with weapons. Number two, I don't support any attack on civilians, be it from Israel, from the US with drones in Pakistan, be it from Russia in Ukraine, be it from Palestinians against Israeli civilians. No civilians should be attacked. We should respect international law. However, in the case of Israel and Palestine, there is absolutely no doubt who is breaking international law. It is the state of Israel with full support of the US government, unfortunately.
You've been going to Gaza for the past 15 years. How did you start doing this work? When did you first decide that you wanted to go to Gaza?
Well, I think it's an interesting starting point here because me as, along with most young Europeans, also radical people, I'm a radical person, I'm a socialist, I was a strong supporter of Israel. I grew up with a narrative of Israel, of the, you know, this really fantastic story, land for a people with for a people without land, and how they made the desert bloom. I remember my mother told me about the kibbutz as a sort of a semi-socialist experiment. And in 1967, when I was a young medical student, I actually volunteered to go to Israel to support by working as a volunteer in the kibbutzes so that the kibbutz people could go to fight the dirty Arabs. I went to the Israeli embassy. They had an appeal to Norwegian youth. I signed up. I was checked out, good to go. And the same evening, my sister's best friend, Ebba, called me and said, so you're going to Israel? And I said, yes, it's international solidarity. And she said, not really. Can you come and we will have a talk? That night was the first time ever I heard about the Palestinian people. And I think that is pretty a pretty good illustration of how much the history of the Palestinian people have been totally overlooked, and that this sort of the narrative of Israel as being this brave little country doing its best to make the desert bloom has totally overlooked the imperial, the colonial character of Zionism and the apartheid structures that Zionism is actually building, with very different treatment of the Palestinian and the Israeli people. So that night I decided not to go. I retracted my volunteering and I became a member of the Norwegian Palestine Committee. Then I was in Beirut in 1981 and 82. I served as a medical doctor in West Beirut in 82 during the Israeli invasion, siege and bombing of West Beirut. It was the worst experience of my life. Mm. We were wading in blood, and I was at the sharp end of the Israeli war machine. And from then, I've been totally devoted to the Palestinian cause. Not only that, also because I think, as a rich country in the West, with an extremely educated healthcare sector, with affluent civil society like we have in Norway, we have a responsibility to take part on the international arena and to support the less fortunate. That's also a reason for going.
You write about your experiences in getting into Gaza, and for the most part, it seems like you haven't really had any problems.
Well, I've been traveling both through Eris, through Israel, on various permissions. You need a permission from the occupier, Israel, to get in. Mm-hmm. Since 2009, cast lead, I haven't had the stomach to travel through these Israeli military checkpoints, so I've been traveling through Egypt.
Why not?
No, simply because when you have felt the atrocities of the Israeli army on the Palestinian civilians, you get a certain aversion against both uniforms and the whole attitude of the Israeli army towards Palestinians and towards those who support Palestinians. So I've been going through Egypt, but last year I had a travel permit from IDF, from the Israeli Defense Forces, as they call themselves, in Gaza only called the Israeli Attack Forces. So I did a mission for UN. I wrote a report on the condition of the healthcare system and the public sector in June last year. And that was a half a year permit. So when the bombing started, I had gone back to Tromsø, to Norway. And I just turned around and went back because they asked me to come. And then I was allowed in. And then suddenly I was declared a security risk, a threat. So now they have on an infinite term said I cannot go.
And so you cannot go back?
Well, you know, Egypt has closed off the border at Rafah, so Gaza is completely besieged. It's been under a brutal siege since 2007, meaning that a population of 1.8 million people, average age 18 years, is starved, denied human rights, denied freedom, denied rights to travel. These are ordinary people like you and me, and mostly young people, children. The average malnutrition in among Gaza's children and youth is 33%, meaning that every third child in Gaza growing up will be stunted, underweight, and too short for age. Anemia in children below two is 75% almost. And this is all man-made. It's not a drought, it's not a flood, it's not an earthquake. It's man-made by the government of Israel with full support of your President Obama. Mm. It's just outrageous. As a mean of collective punishment of the Palestinian people. It's illegal. Against international law, you're not allowed to execute collective punishment. And then comes all these bomb attacks on top. Four since 2006. They call it to mow the lawn. They call it to trim the grass, whatever meaningless symbols they use to describe their military attacks. And during the last attack last year, they didn't kill 2,000. They killed 2,251 Palestinians. Among them were 299 women. And this number is important, 551 Palestinian children were killed. Now, if we ask ourselves one question, and bear in mind, one Israeli child was killed. That is one Israeli child too much. No Israeli children should get killed. No Israeli civilians should get killed. They should have security, of course. But as long as they occupy Palestine, as long as they expand, as long as they keep sieging Gaza and bombing Gaza, there will be resistance. But these 551 Palestinian children, I saw quite a lot of them. And if we ask ourselves one question, I would so much like to ask Michelle Obama this question. What would your reaction have been if Palestinian fighters had got into Israel and, God forbid, killed 551 Israeli children? It would have been called terror, which it is. And isn't it state terrorism and Israel is perpetrating these crimes against the civilian Palestinian population? And this distinction in reaction between 551 and 1 is an apartheid illustration.
You have also said, because you have been in Gaza during 4 attacks working at the Al-Shifa hospital, you said this last attack was much worse than anything you have seen. It was more aggressive. More than 50% of those killed were families this time around, and that's different from last attacks.
Yes, and my source for many of these numbers is the last UN report, sort of the Goldstone 2. Bear in mind that that commission was not allowed to enter Gaza by Israel. They don't even allow amnesty to enter Gaza because they're so afraid of the truth. During the last attack, last July, August, according to the UN report, they dropped 19,000 high explosives on Gaza. That is 533% more than during Cast-Lead in 2009. And if you do your math and you look at the number of Palestinian fighters that were killed by the Israeli army, and you compare that to the number of Israeli fighters killed by the Palestinian fighters, and you look at the civilians, these numbers show us that for every Palestinian fighter that the Israeli army killed last year, they killed 5.3 civilians. They killed 5 times more civilians than Palestinian militants. If you look at the other side, how many civilians did the Palestinians kill per Israeli soldier? The Palestinians killed 67 soldiers and 4 civilians. For every Israeli soldier the Palestinians killed, they killed 0.06 civilians. So there is no doubt from the numbers who protects the civilians, who attacks the civilians. This last attack was 500% more brutal in firepower from the Israeli side, and they killed 5 times more civilians than Palestinian fighters. So where is the indignation? Where is the humanity? Where is this sort of basic empathy with people?
You also point out that in the last attack, again, last summer, 53% of hospitals in Gaza and 60% of clinics were deliberately targeted and damaged. How do you know that?
And 47 ambulances. Well, it's from the UN report. It's from the UN report, from the Amnesty report, from the B'Tselem report. You know, there is a large pile of very, very accurate, very investigative reports that shows that both in 2009 and last year, there were systematic attacks on the healthcare of Palestine. Also, of course, under international law, wholly protected, should not be touched. I went myself to see the Mustashfa Mohammed al-Durra, which is the pediatric hospital in northern Gaza, the day after it was bombed, targeted, destroyed. The Al-Wafa hospital, the rehabilitation hospital in Gaza, was completely leveled by the Israeli army. No reactions. And then we saw the bombing, the US bombing of the hospital in Afghanistan with the Doctors Without Borders. Rightfully so. An uproar of reactions internationally. How can you bomb a hospital? And large, you know, investigations, and there was an apology from the US army, and even Barack Obama said he was sorry. Not a word about Israeli bombing, systematic destruction of not only ambulances and primary healthcare clinics and hospitals in Gaza, but also of hospital workers and medical workers. 10 were killed, hundreds were injured, nobody was safe. There is no safety for any Palestinians. International law is not active at all in Gaza, and nobody protects the Palestinian people against Israeli attacks.
Dr. Mads Gilbert is a specialist in anesthesiology and head of the emergency medicine department at the University Hospital of North Norway, and he has been carrying out medical solidarity work for the Palestinians since 1981. He has witnessed four Israeli attacks on Gaza. During last summer's assault, he kept a camera in his pocket. He was working with Palestinian doctors in Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital. And his new photo book, Night in Gaza, includes stories about what he saw along with those photos. Last year, Israel banned him from ever returning again. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for Mads Gilbert, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. He says the point of the book is to really tell stories, and he dedicates his book to the Palestinian health workers in Gaza, and we'll talk about them in just a couple of minutes. If you have any questions for Mads about why he goes back on a regular basis and what he sees, he is now on your 25th speaking tour of the United States. He's been coming to this country for many, many years. He was just at MIT with Noam Chomsky. He also spoke at Columbia. So he tells American stories about what he sees. If you have any questions for him, we'd love to hear from you. Also, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was just in Washington, D.C. He met with President Obama, and according to reports, the aid that the United States is going to give Israel every year might go up from $3 billion to $5 billion a year. So what questions do you have? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Mads Gilbert will be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the South Berkeley Senior Center, 2939 Ellis at Ashby. And Marie has a question over email. Thank you so much for telling Americans the real truths about the occupation of Palestine by Israel, especially in Israel's visit to the United States and his request for billions of dollars in weapons. The world's silence about the plight of Palestinians has been and still is deafening.
Yeah, thank you so much for that comment. I don't think the silence is deafening. I agree with you. It has been deafening. I think that the solidarity work is really picking up. I think in the era of social media, it's much harder for mainstream media and for the occupiers to hide the truth. And thanks to the brave people of Gaza, in particular the young people, more and more stories keep coming out. You know, there were only minutes after each bombing raid that we learned about the losses, what kind of buildings were attacked. And right here, being here in the Bay Area, I'm extremely honored. My driver this morning was one of the activists who blocked the harbor and made the Israeli container ships have to go away. This is a formidable tool. The boycott, divestment, sanction movement is a peaceful, democratic tool. And I think I'd like to make just one comment, because it was strange to be at Shifa this last attack last July and see how quickly US and NATO and EU delivered sanction cards as we were standing in the bomb rain in Gaza. They were delivering sanction cards around the clock.
What does that mean, sanction cards?
Against Russia.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Economical sanctions, trade sanctions, political sanctions, weapon embargo, and even threats of invasion. At the same time, they look away when Israel is bombing almost 2 million incarcerated people who don't have shelters, who can't even fly away. And on top of that, when UN actually points out UN schools in Gaza to be shelters for the civilians, and they give the coordinates to the Israeli commanders, not one time, but seven times, they bombed these shelters too. Israeli army bombed four UN shelters in Gaza last year on the 24th, the 29th, the 30th of July and the 3rd of August, killing almost 50 people inside the shelters and wounding more than 300. Goes unnoticed. And at the same time, there are huge sanctions imposed on Russia. I don't support what Russia did in Ukraine, not at all. But the point is that this lack of consistency, this double standard, is what uproars so many people in the global south, because they see our double standards. So what we can do is to get knowledgeable, be active, take part, and stand up and say, I don't want this world. I don't want apartheid. I don't want bombing. I want to take my place in history, and I want to maintain my right to have an opinion and to act on it.
You dedicate your book, Night in Gaza, to those who are dedicated, the Palestinian health workers in Gaza, who work 24 hours sometimes with little to no pay. And I just want you to tell some stories, because that's why you wrote this book. You have a chapter on Ayman, the ambulance worker. He's been working in the ambulance service for 17 years. He's worked all of that time in Gaza. Since he was a child, you write, his dream was to become a paramedic. And he told you, "This is the worst I've ever experienced. It's by far the dirtiest war they've carried out. You cannot imagine the things we see here," he says, nodding in the directions of the blasts. "We've never, ever had so many women and children among the casualties. We cannot get to many places or reach everyone when the raids happen. They have killed so many people."
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure if I can tell you the story of Ayman, because it's extremely moving. These people are so brave. Bear in mind that during the last attack, the Israeli army killed 23 healthcare workers, most of them paramedics. They injured 83, most of them paramedics. Ayman survived. I've known him for 15 years. He's married. He has a wife and two or three kids. He could almost never go back because they lived in the his family lives in the southern parts of Gaza, too dangerous to drive. And in the midst of bombing, one night he came to see me in Shifa, and he brought me two gifts. I mean, in this situation, he has the surplus. He has the energy to think of me as his guest. He brings me an ambulance vest and jacket, which I proudly received. And he said, "You know, Dr. Matz, not everybody is entitled to get this vest, but you will get it." And he gave me gifts for a nurse that worked in Gaza, you know, like 10 years ago, to take to Norway in order to, salute her. These medical staffers are risking their lives for their people. They are symbols of humanitarianism, of decency, of resilience and resistance. And during this last attack, I think that never before have I seen the Palestinian people so united. What they say, from the old professor in Shifa to the janitor, from the mother with a killed child to the nurse or the medical student, they all say, it's not Hamas, it's not Fatah, it's not Ramallah, it's not Gaza. It's the Palestinian people standing tall in a united struggle against an unjust occupying force that has occupied us for nearly 70 years. We will not surrender.
Dr. Mads Gilbert is author of the book Night in Gaza. We've got about a minute before break. Why don't you tell us about Dr. Sobi Shaikh? You write that he is the medical director of the whole hospital, Al-Shifa, with hundreds of tasks to handle. For 20 years in his role as a surgeon, he's been developing surgical facilities for the population of Gaza.
Dr. Sobi Shaikh is a fabulous man. He is Palestinian. He is from the Shaikh family, which is a Gaza family. 75% of those who live in Gaza are refugees. By definition, by the UN definition, Dr. Shaikh is one of the old Gaza families. He's a dedicated surgeon. He's trained abroad. He's a brilliant doctor and a terrific organizer. In the midst of these enormous currents of injured that came to Shifa, like the 20th of July, during the night of the Sashaya massacre, we had 400 patients coming to Shifa Hospital. And one of the first things that the Israeli army does is to cut the electricity to Gaza. So there is no electricity. The hospital is running on two old generators, lacking spare parts because of the siege. The power goes out every now and then. You know, the lights blacken, the operating room lamps go black. He stands there. He's not very tall, but he's very decisive, very mild, and yet extremely pointed. And what he does is that he sees his workers, his fellow doctors, his nurses. And I asked him, what are the principles guiding you in this very difficult leadership role in a situation with a massive imbalance between the needs of the patients and the capacity of the hospital? He says, whatever we do, we must always stay focused on our patients and on caring for them humanely. Then we must secure treatment for our patients according to their needs and our resources. And we must get the experts the equipment and resources they need to do their job. These are the three most important things. And he underlines the point number one, to treat the patients humanely. And I think what sort of rests with me after all these years in Gaza is how they protect humanity, how they are not allowing themselves to degrade them to the humans they are treated, to the animals they are treated like. They maintain their humanity. And for the medical doctors and nurses and paramedics, I think they maintain a very high medical standard compared to what we are used to. I don't think our hospitals would last for 51 days and nights without electricity, supplies, water, food, and with a massive influx of patients.
Dr. Mads Gilbert is the author of the new book, Night in Gaza. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways to take part in the conversation on Your Call on the telephone. Our telephone number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can go to our website, yourcallradio.org. KLW gets most of its financial support from listeners, people such as Deborah Rudolph and John Hawley of Berkeley. Thank you for listening to and supporting KALW, the first FM signal west of the Mississippi.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with economist Robert Reich about his new book, Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few. Robert Reich believes that with the right policies, the system can be saved and inequality can be reversed. What do you think? Can the system be saved? Should it? And what are the alternatives? That's tomorrow. Friday, it's our media roundtable. Today, I am speaking with Dr. Mads Gilbert. He is a specialist in anesthesiology and head of the emergency medicine department at the University Hospital of North Norway. He has been going to Palestine for the past couple of decades. He's been doing humanitarian work with Palestinians since 1981. He was last there in the summer at the Al-Shifa Hospital during Israel's 2014 war on Gaza. At the time, he had a camera in his pocket. His new book, Night in Gaza, has the photos that he took along with stories about what he saw. And Dr. Gilbert will be speaking, I'm sorry, I got this wrong. It's actually tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the South Berkeley Senior Center, 2939 Ellis Street at Ashby. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Haas who says, utmost respect to you, Dr. Gilbert, for your courage and humanity. Can you compare Palestinian solidarity in Europe versus Palestinian solidarity in the United States?
Thank you. That's a very good question. I don't have any scientific studies or numbers, but my impression, having traveled here to the United States many, many times since 2009, I have been really struck by the increasing intensity and the increasing activity in the solidarity movement in the United States. Independent Jewish Voices, Students for Justice in Palestine, the humanitarian organizations like Palestinian Children Relief Organization and Kinder USA are getting more and more active. And I think in particular I would like to underline the alliances between the brave Jewish voices who are supporting the Palestinian people and who are defying Zionism as a colonial and apartheid project and joining forces with Palestinians and all of us who support justice. These brave people, together with the young students on campus, are sort of, I think, the forces that are the game changers, because U.S. at the end of the day is providing $3 billion a year to uphold the occupation and to maintain the capacity of Israel to execute these horrible bombing actions on Gaza and build more colonies and establish more occupiers on the West Bank. So I think that, yes, U.S. is active, more active. It's increasing. I think we may reach the critical mass quite soon that will make politicians in Washington have to reconsider their very uncritical support of the occupation of Palestine and of apartheid, Israeli apartheid, because really this is to support an apartheid regime. UN has voted Zionism as racism and as colonialism many times. And the last to jump the wagon when you have a popular resistance will, of course, be the politicians. We saw that with the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. Comparing Europe and US, I think the activity is good in both continents. It's certainly growing much stronger. For example, in Norway, it's now mainstream to be pro-Palestinian. We used to be the most pro-Zionist country in Europe. We, Norway, gave the Israelis the heavy water to make the atomic bomb. Unfortunately, the Norwegian weapon producer Nammo is still exporting weapons to Israel and to the Israeli army through its subsidizers in the US. But we are picketing on them, and the BDS movement is growing like an international campaign. It's a deluge, and it's having effect. The foreign investments in Israel last year dropped by 40%, I think, according to the World Bank survey. And the tourism is down by 25%. And what Israel really fears is isolation and economical repercussions. So keep up the good work, people. Join the BDS. Be active. Block the harbors. Go to your grocery store. Don't allow any Israeli goods that is produced or exported from Israel, because you can be part. Margaret Mead, the famous American social anthropologist, she said, "Never stop believing that a small group of committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has."
What about politicians in the U.S. versus politicians in Europe? Because Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with President Obama yesterday. According to reports, they're talking about increasing U.S. aid to Israel from $3 billion to about $4.5 billion. According to DOD Buzz, it's a website about the military. The U.S. and Israel are negotiating a potentially massive aid deal that would boost funding and its planned weapon programs, such as the F-35 and the V-22 Osprey. And then presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton wrote a long piece in the Forward saying, "I have stood with Israel my entire career as Secretary of State. I requested more assistance for Israel every year, supported leaving the Iron Dome rocket defense system in place, and as president, I will continue this fight."
Do these people have a heart is my return question. Do they have a heart? Have any of them been to Gaza? Have they been to Kalandia to see the checkpoints on the West Bank? Have they been to the refugee camps, like refugee camps in Lebanon, or Yarmouk in Syria, where the Palestinians were eating grass? Have they seen the atrocities of the Israeli army's repetitious attacks? I don't know what kind of fact base they are sort of making their decisions on. But I think it is a political important thing here. Israel is the colonial stepstone for U.S. hegemony in the Middle East. Israel is critically important for geopolitical reasons for the U.S. And number two, Israel is incredibly important for the military-industrial complex. Gaza is probably the largest test tube in the world when it comes to experimenting with new Israeli-American weapons, like the dime bomb, the dense inert metal explosive. Also, Israeli arm producers, they brand their weapons with, you know, the sort of the branding slogan they have on international arm fairs is, "We are experts on population separation." One of the largest Israeli weapon producers, Elbit Systems, got the contract, the bid, for the new surveillance system on the Mexican-American border. So, of course, this is a huge financial military project where there are enormous financial interests in the U.S. to uphold and to expand Israeli aggression against the Palestinians. So what can we build against it? Well, we can build justice and we can build solidarity. Desmond Tutu, the famous South African bishop, he said, "If you maintain a position of neutrality in a situation with oppression, you end on the side of the oppression or of the oppressor." There is no neutrality. You have to choose side. You have to stand with the Palestinian people. And that means, at the end of the day, also to stand with the Jewish people. Because both people need justice in order to have security. It's simple as that.
Dr. Mads Gilbert is author of the new photo book, Night in Gaza. He has been doing medical solidarity work with the Palestinians since 1981. He has been in Gaza during the last four attacks, 2006, 2009, 2012, and last summer. And that's when he put a camera in his pocket as he was working with patients and treating patients, and he took photos when it was appropriate. His new book, Night in Gaza, has those photos along with stories about what he saw. He'll be speaking at Stanford tonight at 5 o'clock, tomorrow at 7 at the South Berkeley Senior Center, and that is 2939 Ellis at Ashby. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions for Mads Gilbert, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions about the reality on the ground in Gaza, what did you think about the meeting between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Obama? 866-798-8255. And let's go to Dan in Berkeley. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I want to raise a question with Dr. Gilbert. I have a translation of a Norwegian newspaper, Dagbladet, and it's admirable that Dr. Gilbert opposes attacks on civilians. But a few days after 9/11, Dr. Gilbert was quoted in this paper saying, "The attack on New York did not come as a surprise after the policy that the West has led during the last decade. The oppressed also have a moral right to attack the USA with any weapon they come up with." So that's the first. I'd like to hear comment on that. Second,
well,
of all,
let's take a comment on that one first, Dan. Hold on. Stay on the line.
Hello, Dan. Thank you for that question. I'm happy you bring it up because it gives me the opportunity to clarify. I retracted and denounced that one sentence in that one interview the same week as it came, and I have repeatedly retracted that one statement. I do not at all have that opinion. I do not support any attacks on civilians, be it from the Palestinian side, from the Israeli side, from US weapons wherever in the world, or from Norwegian jet fighters bombing Libya. So this is an old story and it is no longer valid, my friend.
Well, then why did you say it? A. B. It's well known that Hamas openly supports a genocide of Jews, not just in Israel, but worldwide. During World War II, you didn't have doctors going to Germany to help the Germans who were in bad shape during the war, and yet you would go and work with people who openly support and call for the genocide of Jews everywhere on the planet. How do you justify that?
Well, sir, with all due respect, I hear that you are calling me a Nazi. I don't think that is a valid accusation, and I don't think that discussion is bringing us anywhere. Norway was occupied by the German army for 5 years. If anybody today would call that the Norwegian-German conflict and not the German occupation of Norway, he would probably be beaten up. We threw out the Germans through armed resistance and a justified struggle. Israel is occupying Palestine. There is no doubt about that. They are colonizing occupied Palestine. They are repeatedly bombing Palestine. I don't support Hamas. I don't support Fatah. I support the Palestinian people and their right to fight occupation. Thank you so much for the questions.
Finally, CNN banned you because it said that you fabricated treatment of a boy in the hospital, and your video is no longer acceptable on CNN. So you're a propagandist, and thank you, Rose, for always having pro-Palestinian propagandists on your show.
Have a good day, sir.
Thank you for calling in, Dan. We have a wide range of guests on this show. Thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Michael in San Francisco. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I also really find that the use of numbers to point that Israel somehow is targeting civilians disgusting. You know, the fact that Israel, which is a, you know, there's lots of problems with Israel, of course. It's a liberal democracy. There are Palestinians that sit on the Israeli parliament. But the fact that they have technology which stops bombs from killing their own people, to use that as evidence that Israel is indifferent to civilian life, is really just repulsive. the fact is that virtually every rocket launched out of Gaza is aimed at civilians, and the fact that Israel can intercept them is not evidence that Israel disregards civilian life. And we see that the Gaza fighters put their rocket launchers in hospitals, in schools, they put their offices in UN buildings. The fact is that there are ways to solve the problem peacefully, but there are, what, on an average, 2 to 3 rockets a day, every day, coming out of Gaza aimed at Israel, and Israel doesn't do anything. And then when they respond, then the Gazans claim, oh, poor us. It's really disgusting the way you pervert the numbers to point that for your own political purposes. I mean, there were peace treaties on the table.
Let me get Mads Gilbert to respond.
Well, Mads, if we look at the numbers, 71 Israelis were killed during the 51-day attack on Gaza last July, August. 4 of them were civilians. 2,251 Palestinians were killed. 299 were women, 551 were children, 279 were Palestinian fighters, according to the UN report. The increase in arsenal of weapon dropped on Gaza was, as I said, 533%. They dropped 19,000 high explosive shells, so much that even US Pentagon military experts said that the only aim of these attacks was to kill as many people as possible. Palestinians shot 4,500 rockets back. 90% of them were shot down. The Israelis executed 6,000 airstrikes on Gaza during the 51 nights and days. That is 5 airstrikes per hour. So, you may dislike numbers. I think as a medical doctor and as a researcher, I think numbers is giving us a better view of reality. And from the numbers that I have seen, and I don't have any intention of either lying or using numbers as propaganda, from the numbers that I have seen, and they are congruent with the numbers that we have published from Shifa Hospital, there is absolutely no doubt that the civilian Palestinian population in Gaza was taking the heaviest tolls, not because there is any documentation of shooting from hospitals and school, as you say. I'd like you to produce that documentation in a substantial way, because it has not been documented, and that is because it's not true. I would have left Shifa Hospital on the hour if I saw any violation in Shifa of the Geneva Convention.
Thank you for calling in, Michael. Today we're speaking with Dr. Mads Gilbert about his new book, Night in Gaza. He'll be speaking tonight at Stanford at 5, and then tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the South Berkeley Senior Center in Berkeley, 2939 Ellis Street. Mads, the chapter that was just so hard to read was about shrapnel. And, I mean, you've got photos of children in here that have been hit by pieces of shrapnel, which vary in shape and size, but all are very heavy with razor-sharp edges. They penetrate the skin. Why is shrapnel being used?
Shrapnel is sort of the reminiscence of the exploding artillery shell. The explosive is inside, like this coffee mug I'm having here. You have the high explosive, and the metal casing is made from a mixture of metals that, when it explodes, it disintegrates in very, very sharp metal fragments. They travel at extremely high speed, and if they hit the body, they will penetrate your jacket, your shirt, your skin, your subcutaneous tissue, your bones, your vessels, into your liver, your spleen, your aorta, whatever. So shrapnels is a byproduct of artillery shells. And as I said, the Israelis dropped no less than 19,000 such high-explosive artillery shells, and they cause swarms of these shrapnels. Shrapnels are extremely difficult to treat because more often than not, each victim will have up to hundreds of inlets of these shrapnels. Many die from them. The bigger shrapnels can cut off your leg or your arm or your head. We had headless children coming into Shifa. And the reason why there was so many shrapnel injuries during the last attack was, of course, that the ground invasion with Israeli army they used huge amount of artillery shells against the civilian habitat, villages, suburb areas like Sashaya, the village of Kusar, and other parts of Gaza were heavily hit with artillery shells that produce shrapnels.
You write in your book that at that time, I mean, when you were treating people who were hit with shrapnel, you felt very desperate because you didn't have the resources for anesthesia.
We didn't have enough. Of course, the medical community in Gaza upholds the same humanitarian basis for treatment of patients as we are used to. But, for example, we only had short-acting local anesthetics, lidocaine. We did not have mepivacaine, which is a long-acting anesthetic. We did not have enough capacity to give general anesthesia to all the kids that we should have given. Among the 12,000 injured, there were 3,500 kids and 3,500 women. So there were 7,000 children and women being injured, taken to these hospitals. So more often than not, we had to accept a certain level of residual discomfort or even pain, because if we should take all the injured that needed, actually, ideally, should have had full anesthesia, we would not have had capacity to operate those who really needed expanded surgery. There are 6 operating rooms in Shifa Hospital. Often we did 2 cases in each room. We doubled the capacity, and still there would be tenth and tenth of people waiting to have minor surgery done. And they, you know, in my peaceful city of Tromsø and my university hospital, they would have had general anesthesia. We could not do that.
What about the children? You point out that, say, if you're an 8-year-old living in Gaza, you've lived through 4 attacks. Mm-hmm. What is this doing to these children?
Well, there are good studies. There is a research center in Gaza called Gaza Community Mental Health Center, who is doing high-class academic studies on the long-term and short-term effects of all this trauma. What they have shown in cooperation with Finnish researchers is that about 1/10 of the children will have long-term permanent stress disorders. But the resilience, and I want to point out that I'm not portraying a suffering, it is a suffering population, but I'm not portraying a population that is giving up in any way. They are extremely resilient, and they are really, trying to overcome all the trauma. But of course, when a child is traumatized not only one time, but 2 times and 3 times and 4 times, losing their habitat, losing the school, losing family members, and having these threats on their head all the time, it is a chronification of this traumatization. And that's the most evil thing, I think, about these Israeli tactics. It is that every time there seems to be some sort of peacefulness landing on Gaza, there is a new attack coming. There is a new bombardment. There is a new wave of terror. There is a new river of blood. So these kids, these 1.1, 1.2 million kids, are growing up with uncertainty and this man-made hellish life. This is not an earthquake. This is not a natural disaster. This is man-made, deliberately planned and executed to inflict maximum damage on the habitat, on the apartment houses, schools, water pipelines, sewage systems, in order to break the resistance of the Palestinian people. And it is the responsibility of the Israeli government, of Prime Minister Netanyahu, and your President Obama. That's where the money goes.
We have time for a few more calls. Let's hear from Sally in Berkeley. Hi, Sally.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you, Rose, for allowing your guest to express a point of view that is rarely heard in the United States. And we cannot blame the American people for their position, because they don't know. They're entitled to hear both sides and let them decide, but this position is often not heard. So from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you. And secondly, I when I watch the news, I sometimes go on, the French channel, France 24, and I hear more than what I do on the regular channels, and I am just horrified at what's happening. And I just think if we looked at a map from 46 of the area and compare it to who owns what land or territory today, and if we just look at the figures that he just very clearly expressed, the number of children, Palestinian children versus Israeli. No child should ever die. This is just horrifying on both sides. But the only way we can have peace, I think, is we have to have a dialogue, and we have to hear all sides. And thank you for that.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Sally.
Yeah, Sally, thank you so much for your comment. And I totally agree with you. I think that the American public is lied to. I think that mainstream media, not only in the US, also in Europe and in my country, are, you know, it's a lie industry. It's producing lies all the time. So thanks to these local radio stations, we get a little glimpse of alternative thinking. And I agree with you. If ordinary good American people had seen what we have seen, had heard what we have heard, had got the numbers that we have, read the book, get the reality, travel to occupied Palestine, it would change. And that's why I'm traveling to the US to give these talks all over, because I think you are the change makers. And once the American people, like the good people of San Francisco, block the harbor for Israeli cargo ships, that's the game changer. You have the tools in your hands. Peaceful, democratic, boycott, divestment, activism. Go for it.
And just quickly, Mads, did the last attack on Gaza change your perspective about the limits of humanitarianism?
Yeah, in a way, because what you see, it's a debate, you know, what is humanitarianism, what is solidarity? And for me, I am always neutral in relation to each patient. I would treat an Israeli soldier, an Israeli general, just the same way as I would treat a Palestinian child or a Palestinian fighter. There is no doubt that's neutrality. My choice lies before that. I travel to Gaza and not to Israel in the situations of attacks, because I support the Palestinian people. That said, you know, I think that medicine is a tool of change. Professor Firkov, the famous German pathologist, said that politics is nothing else but medicine at a large scale, because medicine, health, public health, is all about basic preconditions for life: water, food, security, school, work, and a place to live.
Dr. Mads Gilbert is out with a photo book called Night in Gaza. He's a specialist in anesthesiology and head of the emergency medicine department at the University Hospital of North Norway. He's speaking at Stanford tonight at 5, tomorrow at 7 at the South Berkeley Senior Center. Mads Gilbert, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me, and have a brilliant day.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll discuss modern-day capitalism. In his new book, Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few, economist Robert Reich writes about how power and influence have created a shrinking middle class and the greatest income inequality and wealth disparity in 80 years. He believes that with the right policies, the system can be saved and inequality can be reversed. Do you think the system can be saved? Should it? What are the alternatives? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.